This podcast is brought to you by Julius Meinl Coffee. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Athos Syrianos joining me here in the studio. Unfortunately, Mr. George Danikian is still recovering from that UEFA Champions League final loss. Tottenham Hotspur went down to Liverpool. That is old news, but George is sick. He's got the flu. We wish him a full recovery and hope he's back with us next week.
That's right. You got me instead, though. It's
our ratings are just going to plummet, aren't they?
Oh, it could go either way. It depends on how we go tonight. But we do have a big show, a lot of news. A big news piece coming out of the Australian football circle with Costa Barbarossa's departing Melbourne Victory, and according to a number of reports, will be joining Sydney FC with the Sky Blues set to make the announcement tomorrow.
And we won't go into that too much because we'll wait until we get Sydney Morning Herald's journo Dom Bossi on at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. He will give us all the latest in what is going on in the country in terms of transfers. We will also go through all of our European transfers, recap the UEFA Nations League.
That was massive.
A Ronaldo hat-trick, which was pretty outstanding.
Every time with Ronaldo, you think, oh, maybe, does he still have it in him? Is he past it? He just goes and produces something like that. That hat-trick, I think, was about as perfect as you could expect. A stunning free kick. And then that last goal was just vintage Ronaldo, the step-overs and the curl. It's as good as you'll see. And now Portugal will be in the final of the UEFA Nations League, one of the more confusing tournaments in world football. But, of course, they'll have the opportunity to win that on home soil when they face the winner of England or the Netherlands.
And joining us in about a couple of minutes, we'll have Capital Football CEO Phil Brown on to talk about the funding that they've received from the ACT government. Before we get to any of that, Athos, The FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off in just a few days.
Very exciting. A matter of hours. We've all our friends and colleagues who follow the Matildas and follow women's football, a lot of them are over in France. Optus Sport and SBS, who will be covering the tournament, have got fantastic teams over there. We spoke to SBS commentator David Bashir. He's very excited. I'm sure he's over there. Our very own Marissa Lordanik posted a photo of her first croissant in France, so she's over there. We'll look to speak to her throughout the tournament. But yes, I couldn't think of a better place for the tournament to be held, Louise, than France.
Oh, it would be sensational, wouldn't it? And of course, the whole tournament kicks off with the opening game, the hosting South Korea, which will be Saturday morning, 8th of June, 5 o'clock a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time for all of those early risers who want to catch the latest action. But the Matildas, more importantly, let's get to it. The Matildas have arrived in France and they are settling in ahead of their opening group stage match against Italy, which is on Sunday, 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. We have a really good that is a really good time slot for us.
That's prime time. We're very fortunate these last few tournaments. We know the Socceroos kicked off their World Cup campaign. I think it was 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and now the Matildas, 9 o'clock. It's perfect timing for us in Australia. Wherever you are in the country, you'll have a great opportunity to see the Matildas kick off their World Cup campaign against Italy. The Matildas, of course, go in as heavy favourites, as France do against South Korea. So a good opportunity for a few of the favourites to get off to a good start.
Yes, that's exactly right. We heard from Hayley Rasso. She was saying that the whole team received a number of gifts from local children and they witnessed a display from a French orchestra. Of course, the whole thing about a FIFA Women's World Cup, a FIFA World Cup, no matter whether it's men's, women's, youth, senior, whatever country that they have it in, the country always looks to bring through their own values and culture.
They do a fantastic job of welcoming and even making the fans really embrace and really be immersed within the culture. It's a great opportunity for the host nation to show off what they have. And as we know, France is a beautiful country. They've been really hanging to host a major football tournament for quite some time. So it's great to see that they'll be they've been rewarded for their, you know, persistence, and they'll no doubt put a great show on for the Women's World Cup, which, as you mentioned, kicks off in a few days.
And it's in the heart of Europe. Can you imagine how many football fans are going to be going to this? FIFA are expecting it's going to be their biggest Women's World Cup yet.
Well, location-wise, it's perfect, given where France is geographically. So easy for neighbouring European nations to come across, and confident many Australians have made the trip over, and many from Japan as well, given how big women's football is there. Expect to see many US fans too, because they are football nuts over there, and their women's matches sell out 15, 20,000 people a game. So it should be a fantastic tournament, great atmosphere at the stadiums too, right throughout.
Unfortunately, for our friends across the ditch, New Zealand, they will have a very tough opening group stage game against the Netherlands. We saw the quality that they produced against the Matildas. We know that they have a pretty stacked side, but it's going to be a very interesting group stage, because looking at some of these other games, you've got England taking on Scotland on Monday, Scotland appearing at their first ever FIFA Women's World Cup, which is really delightful.
And if they can
really
knock off England, that would be so big for them. We know England will go in as favourites. They're going in as very heavy favourites in this tournament, and there is a different feel about England this World Cup compared to other World Cups in men's and women's, where people were sort of hoping that, you know, that can they do it? There's a real confidence, if you speak to English people, that, you know, this is the tournament where the Lionesses are really going to explode. And many people have them as favourites to make the semi-finals, but I really think they can go on and win it. They're certainly capable of it. They've got a great coach, a great team. Like the Matildas, a lot of their players are of the right age. They've been together for a long time. This generation has really showed what they're capable of. So I think for them, if they walk away empty-handed, it'll be considered a failure.
And especially with many of those players playing in the domestic league over there in the UK, we saw that Manchester United recently formed the women's team, and Manchester City are doing quite well. Arsenal women. Arsenal actually have quite a lot of players here at the FIFA Women's World Cup. Joe Montemurro is there.
I wonder where
watching.
His allegiance lies. Will he be supporting the Socceroos or many of his players that play for the UK?
You mean the Matildas?
The Matildas.
It'll probably be split.
I think so.
Just looking at everyone.
I think for him, he'll be celebrating more so the event and football in general, although you'd hope he'd be supporting the Matildas if they do meet the Lionesses. But, of course, that's neither here nor there. The Matildas won't be playing England in the group stage, but they could meet further down the line.
I want to know, Athos, your top four.
That's tough. I'm going to put the Matildas in there just as a fan of Australian football. I'm going to put the Netherlands in there too, because I was very much convinced of their attacking third, especially against Australia. I think their front line is the best in this tournament. I'm also going to put England in there, and I'm going to put the USA too. I think the French will just narrowly miss out.
Okay. I'm going to swap England for France.
Okay. But I think that just goes to show how tight this tournament is. There are probably 6 to 7 sides who could win this, and that's a quarter of the tournament. So
you're
to
right.
think that,
but it's also a reflection on how far the women's game has come. You know, how quickly these teams are progressing, and especially in their domestic leagues, as we've touched on.
Yeah, when we know the French women's system and their academy is the best in the world, so they're in a great position. Not only are they hosting it, but women's football cannot be any better over in France. So they're one of the favourites, as is England, as we mentioned. So it's mouthwatering to think how far these teams can go, and there'll be some incredible matchups as we progress through the quarterfinals and the semifinals as well.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos joining me here in the studio. Remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call or tweeting to us at FNR_radio, or if you are with us on Facebook Live, comment below. We'll get through as many of your comments as we can over the next 50 minutes. Joining us now, though, is Capital Football CEO Phil Brown. Phil, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Louise Athos, welcome.
Phil, a big announcement today, and it surrounds the $20 million in funding from the ACT government. How significant is this for you?
It's an amazing announcement, a really great week, an exciting week for football in the ACT. Without the support of the ACT government, we wouldn't be able to realise the aspiration that we have to build a hub and a centre and a home for football, and we're very appreciative of it.
Phil Zathos here. Congratulations on the announcement. It's nonetheless a massive win for football in the capital city and the territory. But tell us about the process, because you were assessing multiple options as to where you guys were going to be based.
Yeah, the process has been ongoing for a number of years, trying to identify a parcel of land that is available and of the size that we could use to build this facility. And with Throsby, the allocated space in the district of Gungahlin, which is the fastest growing district in the ACT, with football also growing sport, it's a good fit.
And what will this facility consist of? We're reading it will have indoor, outdoor pitches, pitches for training and match day.
Yeah, it'll have some international size futsal courts, Capital Football, Canberra United offices, associated amenities to service the courts, a mix of synthetic and grass pitches, one of those to be enclosed with a grandstand so that we can host some premier matches. And then allied services associated with the sport that could sit there to ensure that all of the referees and coaches, players and spectators that attend the venue can have a good experience.
And Phil, how long will it take to get this up and running?
The initial indication is that we should be in the first stage by end of 2021. So it's an aspirational goal. These things don't pop out of the ground quickly, so that would be a great outcome for us.
And just on what you mentioned there with futsal, as what I've read, is actually quite big in the ACT, with I think 42% of participants being female. Just how big is futsal in the ACT, Phil?
It's really big. It's a really important part of what we do. And as you said, female participation, 42%. That's more than double the national average. We're making strides and have real goals and ambitions to get to 50-50 across football and futsal. And this gives us a real good opportunity to take those steps.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Luis Taffa and Athos Syrianos, joined by the Capital Football CEO, Phil Brown. The ACT government announced a multi-million dollar football precinct where Capital Football will be host. A fantastic achievement by all involved. Phil, tell us about what this means for football in the ACT and where the code is placed after this announcement.
Well, the code at the moment, we're the largest team sport in the ACT, where we're nearly 40,000 participants across all of our programs that we do now. It's really important for us from a venue access point of view. So we know that a lot of the centres that we use for futsal are at capacity. So this gives us the opportunity to provide more opportunity for more kids that want to play. And it also, as I said before, it services one of the fastest growing areas of the ACT, with green space to be able to get kids onto the park and play football and live a healthy lifestyle.
And Phil, obviously we know that the AIS is in Canberra and that was where the Centre of Excellence was. Does Canberra United still use those facilities to train on?
I know with the last two seasons we've been at the University of Canberra. They've got a great sports hub out there with the Brumbies and the Caps. They've got a really nice field, and they've been very welcoming in servicing our elite female team over the last two seasons. And we're very happy out there at the moment.
And we know the Canberra and ACT region had a very strong A-League bid, which unfortunately missed out this time around. But how does this new investment and improvements made to football in the ACT via this government funding, how do you think it'll improve the chances of maybe getting in an A-League team for the next time around?
I don't know how much it'll improve the chances, and I agree with you. A very, very strong bid went in, and we're very supportive and think the big team did a great job. What it does is hopefully provides a ready-made centre for those players to train in once a bid or once a licence is provided to the ACT, and those male players can then sit next to their female counterparts in a really great football facility to represent the region.
CEO of Capital Football, Phil Brown, joins us here on Evenings on FNR. And, of course, a lot of attention's gone towards how this investment will improve a lot of the elite teams, like the Canberra United, all the W League teams, and, of course, a potential A League outfit. But how does this benefit the grassroots football in the ACT?
It gives us a facility that we control, and it facilitates opportunities for young players in the fastest growing region of the ACT. So there's going to be multiple grass fields and synthetics out there that that will accommodate grassroots matches. It won't just be for those talented player programs.
And of course, I think that's where Capital Football will be based as well. Have you picked out where your office is going to be?
Nah, look, I love an open plan office. Sitting amongst the team, being able to hear and feel what's going on. So no big corner office for me, thanks.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and a big congratulations, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Will do. Thanks for having us on.
That was Capital Football CEO Phil Brown joining us there to talk about the new funding from the ACT government, $20 million, which is going to go to a new football facility for them there in Gungahlin, which is just on the outskirts of Canberra.
And as we know, football is massive in the ACT. You've been an advocate for, especially in Canberra, as well as that greater region. You know, I really think that's where the next A-League licence should be.
I would like to see it go there because it's not just about handing them an A-League licence just so they can get into the A-League. What an A-League licence does, what an A-League team does, is provide a pathway for young players to then progress forward and have a professional career. Because what we're seeing there is in the region, they either drop off, go overseas, or, don't continue it at all.
And as we know, dropping off's terrible, but going overseas is very difficult on the player. So if there's somewhere central where they can all go and further their careers without having to worry about getting lost overseas or maybe losing their passion or getting homesick, it's fantastic. One of the other things it does over there is, as we mentioned, there are so many great players that have already come out of Canberra, so you are right on the money there. We do know that there will be a few announcements made very shortly by Capital Football in relation to some of the national teams that could be coming down and playing matches in the capital city there in Canberra. So stay tuned for that.
And I think it must be the only club in Australia, well, it is, that has a youth league team and a W league team, but not an A league team.
It's the only thing missing. I'm sure by the time the next round of expansion comes and with the second division, they're still very active. I see it on social media, the Canberra team, as well as a few of the others that missed out there. They're always engaging with the community. They're very passionate about the game. And that's what I think that's what this expansion process, that's been the best part. You see so many people passionate about the game, really voicing that, and it just brings the best out of everyone and brings the best out of that passion. You are, of course, listening and watching Evenings on FNR. Please get involved in the discussion, 9944 999 903. If you're maybe in the ACT and have an opinion on the A-League licence there, or tweet to us at FNR_radio. Louise, we will be speaking to the Sydney Morning Herald's Dominic Bossi very shortly. He broke the news about Costa Barbarouses and his move potentially to Sydney FC. That's expected to be announced tomorrow. He had a great season for the Victory, didn't he? 15 goals. He's listed silverware left, right and centre. He leaves a pretty good legacy behind, doesn't he?
He does. And unfortunately, he declined the offer from Melbourne Victory to stay on. Greener pastures somewhere else. Wants a new challenge. And we are hearing, as you say, that he will be appointed Sydney FC's new marquee for the upcoming season.
Yeah, not the first to be traded between the two sides. We know Sebastian Ryle went from the Melbourne Victory to Sydney FC. And fun fact about Seb Ryle, I think 4 of his 9 goals have been scored against Melbourne Victory. So he really knows how to lift for that occasion. That, although the 3 big blues next season will have that underlying subplot of Costa Barbarouses in there as well. And he'll most likely be partnered up with Adam Lafondre. Imagine that. Imagine going from Ola Toivonen to Adam Lafondre. You'd be loving life if you're Barbarouses at the moment. And
maybe that's why he's moved.
Maybe. And if Steve Croker plays him in that role that Kevin Muscat played in this season, then Sydney FC are looking very dangerous up front.
They are. Of course, Costa Barbarousis finished his second stint at Victory with 161 appearances and 51 goals across all competitions. He certainly will be walking into Sydney FC with a lot of experience coming off the back of playing with Ola Toivonen. That combination was just beautiful to watch last season. Toivonen will most likely stay on for Melbourne Victory, which will be a huge asset for them heading into the new season.
He's got another season left on his contract, and we saw what he could do this season. You'd think that, well, fingers crossed, touch wood, that he has a full preseason and a full season. We know he missed, I think, the first four or five games and missed games here and there. So if he's fully fit, expect to see him leading the race for the Golden Boot, because he's capable of some wonderful things. Melbourne Victory, it will be a big preseason for them. They're yet to announce a head coach, and with the departure of Keisuke Honda, you'd expect them, and now Barbarousis, to throw their weight around in the transfer market and bring in some big players.
Yes, and we're hearing, because we've seen Marco Kurz at the airport here in Melbourne a number
Have
of
we?
Times. Yes.
Okay.
He's been spotted.
How's he been?
Is he the one that will be taking over the job at Melbourne Victory? Will he be succeeding Kevin Muscat?
Well, this is the thing. We know, well, from everyone, the rumour is that Victory and Melbourne City are looking at an international coach, a foreign manager to bring in. I think Marco Kurz would be a good fit. He does know the A-League very well. Generally, because the A-League is so unique and we have things like the salary cap and a final series, it can take time for a manager to get their head around that. And you're also playing in summer too, right, which is something that you very rarely do in world football. So given that Kurz knows the A-League and he is across it all, he doesn't need to have that time to really understand it. So it could be a beneficial move to hire him at Melbourne Victory, but I'm sure many have applied. I don't know if you've applied on Seek for the top job.
You keep flattering me, thinking that I'm good enough to apply for the head coaching role
at
Melbourne
Victory. Well, if it's there, you can always apply on Seek. But I'm sure they've got plenty of applications, and it'll be a lengthy process and one that they're in no rush to make. We are only, what, 3 weeks into the world's longest preseason?
Don't remind me. But I'm hearing that Marco Kurz was even given a tour of Amy Park.
There you go. Maybe, I don't know, do they do tours like they do for the MCG? Does Amy Park do stadium tours? Maybe he just tagged her on for one of those.
I don't think it's an attraction like that.
No, maybe not. Well, he might have gotten a private tour. Maybe read into it what you will. This is, of course, Evenings on FNR. Victory fans, we'd love to hear from you in relation to Costa Barbarousis. Does he now become public enemy number one? Is he a villain after everything he's done at Victory, despite moving to Sydney FC? 9944 9999 03. If you're outside of Victoria, if you're a Sydney FC fan and want to share how happy you are that you've signed one of the A-League's top strikers, or tweet to us at FNR_radio, or drop a comment below on the Facebook Live.
Yeah, some good business done there by Sydney FC. Any other rumours or reports going around the A-League at the moment, Athos?
Not so much the A-League, but in the Socceroos, it was a very exciting announcement made in relation to Aziz Baich. He will captain the Socceroos in their international friendly against Korea this weekend. And this is what Graham Arnold had to say on the appointment.
Look, he's the only player that is here from the, obviously, the World Cup squad in Russia, starting more the starting 11, has experienced more bigger occasion games. And, well, he's one of the senior players, and I think he's in a great place at the moment. He's just moved clubs to Turkey, and he's really mentally, again, in a great space. You know, with his leadership qualities, as is, and his energy, I'm sure that, and I expect that the boys will run off that.
Socceroos head coach Graham Arnold chatting there, because he has announced that Aziz Baich will wear the captain's armband against Korea Republic tomorrow night when they play that international friendly. And he also touched on some of the debutants that might get a look in.
Normally when people get opportunities like this, obviously there's a lot of energy, but they need to control their emotions and stick to the game plan. We've worked hard on the principles on how we want to or how we expect to play the game. So, you know, it's they're all in, as I said, they're all in great shape. There's a great vibe around the place and a lot of excitement, of course, and full house tomorrow night. So we're looking forward to the game.
Socceroos head coach Graham Arnold chatting there. They're playing Korea Republic tomorrow night. I'm hearing Son Heung-min has been named in the squad. He could be fired up after that UCL final defeat to Liverpool.
I'd say he is. I'd say he'd want to take it out on whatever he can, and the Socceroos are that roadblock this weekend. Even though it is a friendly, Australia and South Korea have played some very good matches, including that 2015 Asian Cup final on Australian soil. But now we will be playing in Korea, so a great test for the Socceroos. Many of them haven't had too much international experience, so many of them haven't actually played for Australia. Who are you looking forward to seeing most, or who are you hoping gets minutes this weekend?
I'm intrigued to see Harry Suter play.
Okay.
Because I've seen him play at youth national team level, but it'll be interesting to see how he goes in the Socceroos. I think his height could be a huge advantage for him heading into this game, because you'd like to think that not many people or players would get past a 6 foot six centre back.
No, it's very hard to miss, isn't he? You'd think that he'd just eat up long balls all day long. So if he gets a start, I think many people will be having a keen eye on him, considering, you know, there's a chance Australia will be playing in a number of tournaments over the next few years, the Suzuki Cup, the Copa Americas, World Cup, Asian Cup qualifiers. So many opportunities to see a lot of these on the fringe Socceroos.
The other one I'm really looking forward to see is Adam Taggart.
Yeah, you are Adam Taggart, number one fan. Number one fan. You've loved his work since he's come back to the A-League, and now he's actually playing quite well in Korea. He's in form, so he does have that almost a home ground advantage, like the opposition.
Yeah, you'd have to say that. He knows the opposition, how they play, similar style. Could be all in his favour tomorrow night when they take on Korea.
Well, that's the thing as well, because he plays in Korea at a very top level, coming up against Asian opposition would be his forte. He knows exactly how these Asian teams would play and their style. So he could be one that Graham Arnold looks to, not just in the upcoming game, but throughout World Cup qualifiers and Asian Cup qualifiers.
Who are you really looking forward to see in action tomorrow night?
I think I'm really keen to see Terry Antonis and Craig Goodwin, if they get minutes, because I think, as we've mentioned a few times, this is most likely it for them. I think if they don't show anything for the Socceroos, then it could well just be their last opportunity. So I'm expecting them to give it everything they've got. We know what they can do. We see it every week in the A-League. They're very capable footballers. So if they play to their best, then there's no reason why they shouldn't be included in future Socceroos squads. So those two in particular.
Athos, we're going to take a quick break, but coming up is the Sydney Morning Herald's Don Bossi.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffart in the studio. Alongside me is Athos Syrianos. Remember, you can get involved at any time. Give us a call on 03 9944 9999, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. Or if you are joining us on Facebook Live, comment below. Don't be shy, because Athos certainly isn't. He'll answer all of your questions.
Yeah, filling in for George Zanikin tonight. So big, big shoes to fill. We think George is just a bit ill, still recovering from Tottenham's Champions League loss to Liverpool. We probably shouldn't remind Tottenham fans of that. They won't be too happy. But for Liverpool fans, over 500,000 flocked to the streets of Liverpool to see them lift that trophy. 500,000, that's 500,000 people. If that doesn't give you an indication of the size of the club, then I don't know what will.
The big question is, though, can they win the Premier League next season?
Well, that's the thing. That's the one thing which still eludes them. And not only do they now have every Premier League side wanting to have a piece of them, they've got every top club in Europe. And it's a fantastic start for Jurgen Klopp, his dynasty, as they're calling it. And if they have a season like this one, I would be gobsmacked if they get 97 points and don't win the title again. So I think with this Champions League win, they might just edge past Manchester City as the favourites to win the Premier League next season.
Really? You think that they can do one better?
Well, I think that they go in as the favourites, especially after winning the Champions League. I've no doubt about that. But I think it will still come down to those two teams.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos. And joining us now is the Sydney Morning Herald's journo, Dom Bossi. Dom, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dom, it's time to talk transfer news. We heard today that Costa Barbarouses has left Melbourne Victory and is set to find a new destination there in Sydney. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, look, I think it's the transfer season certainly started quite early, probably almost a month early for some. However, Costa Barbarouses looks like he will be playing for Sydney FC for the next 3 years, is my mail. They've secured Costa Barbarouses on a pretty big transfer from Melbourne Victory in terms of what he'll be paid and the length of the contract. He arrives having failed to agree to a new contract extension with Melbourne Victory. So, interesting times ahead. It's certainly going to add a lot of tension to the first Big Blue of next season.
Dom, it's Athos here, and as we know, there aren't too many players that have gone from either club. We know Seb Brolly is the most famous case, and he's always the subject to many jeers and boos when the Victory play them. How do you think Costa Barbarouses will be received from the Victory fans, given that he's won so many pieces of silverware with the club?
Oh, he's got to cop a bit of stick, doesn't he? And to be honest, we want that, I think in Australia, the boos, the jeers that fans get, it's pretty mild compared to anywhere else in the world. It's almost, it doesn't even register in the scale to what happens in Europe and South America. But you want that, you want to have, rivalries that are born out of storylines and narratives. And I think this has the potential to go down in history, at least in, the first few decades of the A-League. It's a pretty big moment. He leaves Melbourne Victory as their top scorer. He's set to sign, for their fiercest, oldest rivals in Sydney FC, a club that just demolished them 6-1 in a semi-final. It's going to incense the Victory faithful, and I think that he's probably aware of it in making this this move. And I think that there will be a fair few boos come round. I'm not sure what round it will be, but the first Big Blue of the season.
So where does this compare to previous similar transfers? We know Vedran Janjetovic went from Sydney to the Wanderers. Harry Kuehl went from Victory to Melbourne Heart. Matt Miller just went from the Mariners to Newcastle Jets. Is this maybe the most controversial? I don't know if it's controversial, but is this at the top of that list?
Time will tell. I think a lot of these transfers end up being defined by what happens next. And I think if he was to have a pretty successful career with Sydney FC, there's no reason why he couldn't be up there with some of the more memorable and maybe divisive transfers in A-League history, certainly. I think what might bode well for him is that he's a pretty mild-mannered character. He's not the kind of to put his nose out of joint. He doesn't really come out and say anything too inflammatory. I'm guessing he'll be quite respectful against Melbourne Victory. He's the kind of character you can imagine if he does score down there in Melbourne, he probably won't celebrate. Whereas I think there might have been a few others that were pretty quick to. Look, Vedran Janjetovic is certainly a pretty famous one. Well, let's not forget as well, whilst they were not traditional rivals, Besart Berisha's move from Brisbane to Melbourne caused a lot of conjecture at the time as well.
Why do you think Costa Barbarouses chose not to renew his contract with Melbourne Victory? Do you think it was he simply wanted a new project, or was it because he chose to step away at the same time as Kevin Muscat?
I think that he did want a new challenge. Look, we'll find out a little bit more in the coming days. He's set to be unveiled by Sydney FC, I think, tomorrow. So the answers could come sooner rather than later. And only he knows exactly. I've heard that he wanted a new challenge. Look, this is probably me just guessing a little bit, but the fact that Sydney FC will be competing, or have got a better chance of competing in the Asian Champions League next year than Melbourne Victory do, given the way the playoff system is probably going to work next year for Australian clubs, that might be a motivating factor. But look, that's a big question he's going to have to answer tomorrow.
We're speaking to the Sydney Morning Herald's Dom Bossi on Evenings on FNR, who's all across the Costa Barbarouses transfer news. I tell you what, Barbarouses up front with Adam Lafondra and throw in a returning Trent Bahaja. It's a pretty good attacking lineup for Sydney FC as they look to defend their A-League crown.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's not forget they've got Luke Ivanovic coming through, the youngster who's been quite impressive in the few appearances that he has had already. So that's already it's four good attacking options they've got. I wouldn't be surprised to see there's one more player they add who could possibly play up front as well.
Well, that's very exciting news. We know Sydney FC, one of the biggest clubs in Australia, and if they're bringing in all this fantastic talent, they're going to be difficult to beat. Dom, we'll shift our attention over to the Western Sydney Wanderers. Of course, many people have their eyes on them. New stadium, they're expected to not only have the fans returning in their full voice, but also on the field to do very well. Is there any transfer news around them? Are they expected to bring in any big players this off-season?
Yeah, my mail is that they are still in the market for a marquee at the right price. However, I believe they may have cooled a little bit on Frank Ribéry. It's still early days in that. He was obviously linked with Western Sydney Wanderers. That could still eventuate. They are on the lookout for a big-name player at the right price, a player that will add some value. They've already made two foreign signings. So, look, they need a big year. And let's be honest, the A-League needs them to have a big year. The new stadium, they've had 3 years of mediocrity. In fact, that's probably being a little bit kind, to be fair. A club like Western Sydney Wanderers should never, ever miss out on the most generous finals system in the world.
Mm. And just on that, what kind of expectations are then placed on Marcus Babbel, given all this?
So Marcus Babbel has, he's obviously going to be staying for next season. I think there have been a few mitigating circumstances that the Wanderers hierarchy have been a little bit forgiving about. That's to do with the training facilities, not getting in there early enough. Obviously, their stadium situation is another. He didn't really have a great opportunity to build his squad to some extent. I mean, he still did sign a fair few players. So I think he definitely will be given the another season. But I think there'll be no more excuses after round one. Put it that way.
If they don't get Frank Ribéry on a marquee deal, who else do you think they might be able to get or should get?
Well, they really, really need key players in their final third. They need a good number 10. They need a good number 9. They need a reliable goal scorer. Now, Oriel Riera was that in his first season, but as the Wanderers struggled, so did he in his second year. They need a player who's probably a little bit more consistent than Oriel Riera, but more importantly, they need someone who can provide better service than what they what the strikers were afforded last year.
Well, Dominic, thank you very much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR. We do look forward to that announcement tomorrow where Costa will be unveiled. Will you be attending that press conference?
Yes, I will be.
Well, we look forward to reading and seeing you there. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That was the Sydney Morning Herald's Dominic Bossi joining us on Evenings on FNR to discuss all things A-League transfer news. Costa Barbarousis set to be announced as Sydney FC's newest signing tomorrow. Very exciting for Sydney FC fans. The reigning champions getting one of the hottest strikers in the A-League at the moment.
There hasn't been too much movement at Perth Glory.
No.
What do you think Perth Glory might do in this off-season? Or have they already done their business with Bruno Fornaroli?
Well, it's a pretty big fish to land, getting Bruno Fornaroli.
How do you think now Costa Barbarousis is being unveiled at Sydney FC with the current squad that they've got compared to Perth Glory, Bruno Fornaroli unveiled there? How would these two teams go?
If they were to face off against each other?
Correct.
It's a very, very good question. The obvious answer is you'd expect a lot of goals in this fixture. Two of the best strikers seen in the A-League going head-to-head. Well, especially given Costa Barbarousis' form this season. He's still only 29, so he's still got plenty of time. It's not as though he's in many fearing that he'll decline in form. And he's got a great squad around him, like he did at Melbourne Victory. He is partnered up with Adam Lafondra, and he's got Trent Bahaja coming back. He's got so many good players in that team that can really help him. Milos Ninkovic, he'll be getting fantastic service. So I expect him, if he's fit and has another full preseason, to hit the ground running at Sydney FC and really being that force with Lafondra. And we could see both those players scoring, well over 10, 15 goals again. On the other side, with Perth Glory, I'm probably more confident Barbarousis will have a better year than Fornaroli, just given that Fornaroli has spent so much time on the sidelines. But if he has a Tony Popovich-like pre-season, then I think you can expect big things from him as well.
Do you think Perth Glory can stay at the same level that they were this season?
Yeah, I don't see them. I don't see them dropping off. With Tony Popovich, they recruit very smartly. They don't just go out and get players for the sake of it. They recruit to fill a need. And, you know, the fact that they haven't been as loud as maybe the Sydney or Melbourne clubs, I don't think that has to be a factor at all. They know what they want. They know where they want to be. They were so very close to lifting that championship and ticking that box. But unfortunately, they weren't able to do it. They'll set their sights on Asia too. So don't forget, they'll also be recruiting quite smartly for players who fit that Asian style, like Victory and Sydney did this year. Although, hopefully, for the sake of the A-League and Australian football, they can progress a little further than they did.
Oh, fingers crossed. We definitely need an A-League club to go further than what the two did this season in the Asian Champions League. While we round out our Australian transfer news, Athos, we touched on the Western Sydney Wanderers with Dom Bossy. They're looking to land Frank Ribery. Not sure how likely that is.
It's a big fish.
But a new report has just come out saying that the Wanderers are eyeing off Melbourne City's midfielder, Luke Bratton. Do you think he might be a good fit for the club?
Yeah, well, we heard something similar to this in January as well, and it didn't quite eventuate. Well, Luke Bratton's a great footballer. For Melbourne City, he scored some fantastic goals. He, of course, is a hero at Brisbane Roar as well, playing in that golden era. So he can certainly fill a need wherever he goes. So I think that'd be a great signing, though, given that Melbourne City have lost several of their players, including Richard Dallad and Riley McGree goes back, and, you know, Bart Schenkeveld. So I think City will really want to keep Luke Bratton because he's a part of that core squad. He's a leader as well, don't forget. And I think what they're doing with Jamie McLaren, and he wants to be one that drives the standards. So I think Luke Bratton is an important part of that City culture and to drive the standards and, you know, for their sake, go on to some success.
And Sydney FC's Josh Brillante is coming pretty close to signing with a K-League club. How convenient. He is with the Socceroos in Korea.
Yeah, some good timing. Good opportunity for him to go and do a bit of business there. We saw Milos Deganek do the same thing when he was over in the UAE for the Asian Cup. He signed for another Asian side there. So good opportunity for him and his agent to go and potentially do a bit of business. And, hey, the more opportunities for him and other Australians to get first-team regular football, the better.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos. Athos, let's dive into the Nations League action.
I've been looking forward to talking about this all day.
The goals were just amazing. We finally saw Cristiano Ronaldo back in action for Portugal. He scored a hat-trick for them to confirm their UEFA Nations League final 3-1 over Switzerland.
It's Ronaldo! Oh, magnificent!
And then they come up against the two banks of four.
And by Shaqiri. Zuba goes down. Ronaldo. Bernardo Silva goes over. And this time the penalty is awarded.
Well, controversy.
And we are going back to the first incident, don't forget, David. Not the call that Portugal have got at the other end. And after review, Felix Braik has decided that they should get the penalty. Ricardo Rodriguez of Milan. And he squeezed the ball on. Switzerland a level through Ricardo Rodriguez. Tough really on Rui Patricio. Bernardo Silva. Ronaldo! Right on cue. And Switzerland have given the ball away. Ronaldo's on a hat-trick, don't forget. Ronaldo, this to wrap it up. Was there ever any doubt? Another Cristiano Ronaldo hat-trick.
Yes, another Cristiano Ronaldo hat-trick. Switzerland were broken 3-1 in Portugal.
Yes, of course, and with thanks to Optus Sports for that audio there. One of the more interesting aspects that come out of that game was the use of the video assistant. Now, as we know, the VAR cannot be called upon while play is occurring. A play has to stop. There has to be a stoppage. So in this instance, Switzerland forward Zuber was brought down in the box but was not awarded the penalty. Portugal, in the very same passage of play, then went up and Bernardo Silva was brought down in the box, and rightfully so, the referee awarded the penalty. The referee then went and checked for the first incident and decided to give Switzerland a penalty, which meant that the Portugal one was rubbed out completely. Switzerland then, of course, went to equalise, but, you know, as you heard at the end there, Ronaldo came to the rescue with two goals to book Portugal's place inside the inaugural UEFA Nations League final.
Very exciting, because they will take on whoever wins in tomorrow's semi-final match between England and the Netherlands. What a match that is going to be. The Netherlands have some incredible talent at their disposal. England similarly have a lot of rising stars coming up through the ranks. I'm still picking a Netherlands win in this one.
It's going to be very, very tight. Interesting to see how many of the UEFA Champions League finalists will be playing. A report coming out from The Guardian today says that Gareth Southgate could potentially rest all seven of his finalists, which does include Harry Kane, of course, who has come back from an injury. So I don't think he would have played anyway. I think it's best that he remains on the sidelines. We do know Jordan Henderson trained on his own as well, so he could be one that could miss out. As for the Dutch, no such word on whether Virgil van Dijk will play, though I think he will most likely. He'll be partnered up with Ajax captain Matthijs de Ligt. So great opportunity for the 19-year-old to learn off one of the world's best centre-backs. Frankie de Jong and Donny van de Beek will also be expected to play and provide plenty of class in midfield. So I think what we can expect in this game is a lot of youth playing. We mentioned De Ligt there, a lot of the Ajax boys, Declan Rice for England as well. So it'll be really, really cool to see so many teenagers and players in their young 20s who have come up through the ranks, are playing some first-team football over there and be rewarded and face off.
And as for England, similarly, the same story with Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, you know, the list goes on. So Trent Alexander-Arnold will also be in the team, or depending if he is going to be rested after his Champions League win. But yeah, as you say, it is going to be a blend of youth tomorrow. And yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what's on offer.
And carrying on from that, Raheem Sterling is expected to wear the captain's armband should Harry Kane not play. It will also be his 50th cap for England. So massive congratulations to Raheem Sterling, another great Premier League season with Manchester City. I think was pipped by his teammates in the best young player in the Premier
Sterling.
League. Yeah.
Yeah, he did win that. Everyone was saying, how did he win the best young player in the Premier League when he's 24?
He was 23 at the start of the season, so I think that's why he counts. But he can't win it next season, so Raheem will have to join the big boys.
I think that best young player thing should be moved to 21.
I agree. It was a bit
unfair. I don't think it should be 23.
Because Raheem's been in and around the Premier League for quite some time, and by 22, 23, you're sort of getting on, and you're not old yet, but while you are still young, I think you've sort of broken away from what's considered a youth player as such.
Yeah, and that young tag, that young football tag.
That's right. And for England, while this may not erase 53 years of heartache and not failure, but disappointing World Cup campaigns, I think if they do come out and win the Nations League, it'll certainly send a strong message. And, you know, it'll be Gareth Southgate and this generation of England players really making a statement.
Do you really think that England are going to win the inaugural UEFA Nations League, though, Athos?
I think they're more than capable of doing it. They have to get past the Netherlands, who themselves failed to qualify for World Cups and the most recent Euros. So they've come off 3 or 4 years of total embarrassment. So they really want to get back up into the upper echelon of football. So for me, this fixture is two teams with so much to prove. You've got two young and exciting managers in Ronald Koeman and Gareth Southgate who are hungrier than ever to win something with their national team and almost have it all culminate into something. They've played so well and so many great players. It'd be a shame to see them not win anything. So expect a lot of passion and a real fiery contest, because I don't think either side, despite it being the Nations League and not being anywhere near the same pedigree as the Euros or the World Cup, you can expect a lot of fire in the belly from all players. So I think this will be a really, really entertaining match to watch.
England have only won two of their past 14 matches against the Netherlands and are looking to win consecutively against them for the first time since November 1946, which is just incredible. Look, let's take a look at England's squad, right? So the goalkeepers that they have picked is Stokes' Jack Butland, Tom Heaton from Burnley, Jordan Pickford from Everton. We mentioned Trent Alexander-Arnold, whether or not he will be rested after that UCL final.
He is, as we mentioned, one of the younger players in the squad, not as much international experience. He'd be one of the players who I think would really be gunning to play. He'd be really excited for this to represent his national team. So
relish in the challenge.
I'd say he's the one that you play. If you have to pick one from the team, I'd say he's the one that you pick.
Ben Chilwell has also been included, as has Joe Gomez, Michael Keane, Harry Maguire, Danny Rose, John Stones, Kyle Walker. In mid, we've got Dele Alli, Ross Barkley, Fabian Delph, Eric Dier, Jordan Henderson, Jesse Lingard, Declan Rice, and up front, you touched on Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Raheem Sterling, and Callum Williams. Do you see, though, the players in that team, if they do get past the Netherlands, beating Portugal?
Well, Portugal, the last time they hosted a major European Cup final, they lost back in 2004. So I'm going to use that logic. I think they're more than capable of doing well, this England team. I'm very excited by especially Gareth Southgate as a manager. I think he's someone who can get the best out of his team. You've got some youth in there too who will be very hungry to win something and make a statement right before the Euros as well and during the qualifiers. So I think we can expect a really strong English team, as we can the Netherlands. As for Portugal, we mentioned, defeated Switzerland last night, 3-1. I was very much intrigued by the matchup between Ronaldo and Kevin Mbabu, and the Swiss fullback who was playing at right back. I thought from the first to the 88th minute, did well to man Mark Ronaldo. He did concede the free kick, which was awarded a bit controversially. I think the Swiss right-back got the ball there, but I thought he held him quite well. But Ronaldo, just as he does, just turned it on in the last 5 minutes, and all of a sudden Ronaldo has a hat-trick and Portugal are through to the final.
It is outstanding. I would love to see Portugal take on the Netherlands. That's the way I think it is going to go, despite the fact that I do love Jadon Sancho. I love the way he plays. Marcus Rashford as well. I just think that the Netherlands squad is going to be too experienced for this England team. I think it is going to be won and lost in the midfield. And Netherlands will book their place in the UEFA Nations League final against Portugal.
Well,
are you tipping England?
I'm tipping England. Okay. I think the Three Lions are going to win. Well, on our preview on the FNR website, written by one of our writers, Nicholas Hughes, he's predicted that the Netherlands win on penalties. So, heartbreaking for the English there. And he predicted Portuguese to win 3-1. So he's 1-1 so far. So maybe that's where the story will go. Penalties, we know England broke their hoodoo in the World Cup against the Swedes, so very exciting for them, and they should be very excited. They've got a great team, as do the Dutch. So I know as a neutral, I'm going to absolutely love it, because this is the type of games that we love watching, two teams, regardless of the tournament, giving it everything they've got.
That's exactly right. That game kicking off tomorrow. Before we round out the show, just a bit of international news. Unfortunately, Neymar, in everything that's going on with Neymar at the moment, he was carried off the field in tears after appearing to suffer a lower leg injury. Major scare for Brazil ahead of the Copa America, because they are set to face Honduras on Monday before rounding out against Bolivia and also Venezuela and Peru.
They've got a very favourable group, I think. If you look at the three groups in the Copa Americas, I'd say Group A is probably the best, and Brazil have got a great chance of claiming 9 points there. But Neymar, yeah, they're sweating on his fitness. We're not quite sure exactly the severity of it. They're still relatively hopeful that he'd play. I think with a player like Neymar, you'd want to give him up until the very last to prove his fitness. They've got a friendly, as you mentioned, against Honduras on Monday before their tournament kicks off against Bolivia on June 15. And really, it would have been an emotional tournament for Neymar, whether or not he plays, given what he's going through at the moment. So perhaps letting him take some time off now and recover and make sure that his head's all good mightn't be the worst thing in the world for him.
Breaking news, Athos, because Neymar has actually been ruled out of Brazil's Copa America squad after suffering a ruptured ligament in his ankle.
There you go.
Been there. I know all about ankle ligament injuries. They take a while and they're not too pretty at all.
What will this do for Neymar domestically? Because we know he's always...
That's right. It's going to take at least 6 months.
But he's always in the discussion with transfer news as well. So does this mean with his injury that he will stay at PSG for at least the first half of the season, or will he stay there for the whole season? Does this rule him out of a move elsewhere?
I think it does. It does.
It has to.
His future now will be at PSG.
For at least this season.
There's no way that another club would be wanting to buy an injured Neymar as they head into their domestic pre-seasons.
Well, I think you're right on the money. I think this spells that he will be at PSG for at least this season. We're not quite sure how much he will be able to play. Of course, he's got a pre-season now with the seasons not kicking off until mid-August. So he's got a bit of time to recover. Hopefully he's back out very, very soon. He could make a move January, but yeah, you don't see him making a move this summer, this European summer.
He will have to stay at PSG unless there is a club out there in the world that wants an injured Neymar on their bench.
Well, it means that he has to come back eventually, right? So he will be back out there. Whether he'll play with Kylian Mbappe again remains to be seen with the young French superstar. I enjoyed your discussion with Nick last night where you brought up the point that at 20 years old, if you've already signed for Real Madrid or Barcelona, what goes through your head? Do you intend on staying there for as long as you can? Obviously, the club has the option to sell you as well if you don't meet standard, right? But does he sign with the Barcelona or Real Madrid with the intention of staying there for 10 years? That's what maybe is the other side to signing at a top club so young.
That's it. I think with De Ligt, just going by his nature and some of the interviews he's conducted, if he did sign for Barcelona at this point in his career, I could expect to see him staying there for the rest of his career until the
days
where he would potentially do what many of them are doing now, cashing out on their European dreams and going to an Asia or Qatar somewhere in the Middle East.
You never know what these leagues are going to be.
Well, that's it. So I think that if he did sign for Ajax at this point in time, it would be for the future. It would be long term. If he was to maybe take an interim step sideways or not necessarily backwards, but just to bridge the gap for a season, whether that be in the English Premier League, there are a number of clubs who are on the hunt for him. Liverpool have entered in the race. Manchester United are also on the hunt for a new centre-back. He would fit perfectly. If he does, sign with one of those clubs, then it's also raising questions as to would those clubs want to, have his autograph for the future, for long term, which you'd have to say they would, as if they'd want to let go one of the hottest prospects in terms of defence.
Well, I think if he signs for Liverpool and partners up with Virgil van Dijk in defence, they're almost unstoppable.
We'll see a glimpse of that tomorrow.
We will. Very excited for that.
As am I. But you're right. If they did sign him, I don't know, he and his agent would have to agree to some pretty strict terms that it would only be for maybe one season.
Yeah, well, he's only 19, so he's got his whole career ahead of him. And Dutch football, if it's in his hands, I'd say it's looking pretty good, and you can expect the Dutch to be favourites in many tournaments in the future.
And before we go, one last one. Gianluigi Buffon is leaving PSG after one season at the Parc des Princes. That's it.
Welcome in the A-League, that's for sure.
Oh, he is, and welcome here in FNR. Athos, thank you for joining me. Thank you for your company at home. Head to FNR's website to listen to all of those interviews in full, including the show. I'm Louise Taffer with Athos Syriannis. We'll see you again at the same time tomorrow.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.